video goes viral and audio doesn't? How do you get discovered? Oftentimes it requires video.
Welcome to the Signal Room. I'm Gemma Brown. I am the GM of the Signal Awards, and we are devoting this episode to video podcasts. A couple of years ago, these two words sounded maybe oxymoronic. Who would want to watch two people talking into a microphone? Well, apparently the answer is millions of us. And now video podcasts are where news breaks. They are where elections are decided. They have become the very foundation of our modern media ecosystem. And today on the show, we have brought together three people who are in many ways responsible for this seismic shift. We have Georgie Holt, the CEO of Flight Story.
Hi there.
Stephanie Smelly, the head of business development at Patreon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And we have Pablo Torre, the host of Pablo Torre Finds Out.
Very good to see you guys as well as hear you.
Pablo, I'm going to start with you. You're a career journalist, MSNBC, ESPN, Sports Illustrated, some of the credentials, and now you do this investigative journalism, deeply rigorous researched work on your show, Pablo Torre Finds Out. I'm curious, how do you see video podcasts changing our expectations of journalism and how we consume information as a society?
Yeah, I think it's essential. And my background as a journalist also involves me gas bagging on TV a bunch. And so in some ways, the moment we're in is the moment that I had unconsciously been sort of preparing for, the reality that you got to find people where they are. And so there are some people who will only watch YouTube videos. There are others that will only listen to podcasts. There are others that will only consume you via these social clips, which are not, unfortunately, how the chef intends them to be consumed. But the chef is not the relevant party in this equation anymore. And I just think of one more thing that a former podcaster who is now the head coach of the Lakers, JJ Redick, once told me, which is that video goes viral and audio doesn't. And so for me, how do you get discovered, discoverability being a term in this industry, oftentimes it requires video. And so all of that goes into why it is that, yeah, my staff is very tired, but also why we're experiencing an amount of growth, I think, that would be otherwise impossible without doing that one-to-one audio to video kind of production.
There was this study that came out a year ago from Pew that was saying that about 21% of Americans would prefer to get their news from news influencers rather than, quote, journalists?
Yeah, it's a human psychology question. We see it metrically. You'll see the videos I sometimes will do on like our YouTube shorts, in which it's just like me holding a camera, talking into my cell phone with like zero post-production. That often presents, I interpret it as, more decisively authentic, or at the very least, what these algorithms are prioritizing in favor of what appears to be authenticity. And so I don't fight it, but it is psychologically true that whoever performs authenticity in this era of institutional distrust, I think, gets to bend the ear, or to torture the metaphor, the eyeballs of the customer, of the consumer, who otherwise may not be open to journalism, reporting information, news being presented in what feels like these very conventional old school ways. And so absolutely, I experience it. And yeah, I don't fight it. I just acknowledge that that's how you got to sort of strategize.
Now I want to know like how you show up as authentic every day, but we'll pin that for another time.
That's a larger existential therapy couch level question, I worry. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll punt this over to Stephanie, kind of similar idea, but from your vantage point at Patreon, how does the ascent of video changed what we expect from creators?
Video hasn't just expanded distribution and reach, but it has really shifted expectations from what you're getting from your favorite podcast. So if you think about it, podcasting used to be relatively contained, where you make a great audio show, you focus on consistency and the RSS feed. But now creators also have to think about formats. So they're navigating long form video, short form clips. What is the title they can place over their thumbnails that will be super catchy and can appeal in various other formats, whether it's Pinterest to YouTube to social media. And they're also thinking of their like platform distribution strategy, often all at once. So this is like poured in a new strategy, a new focus, and expanded the remit of how you think about content more than ever. And so the shift isn't simply be on video. You have to be intentional about how that video shows up in your funnel. And so if you think about some YouTube creators, Instagram clips are top of funnel growth, and then you move down lower funnel to maybe a membership audience. But on audiences that are primarily ad adverse, which are a lot of the creators on Patreon, video is the core move, and it's how you build loyalty and relationship with your audience. And so on Patreon right now, we want to be the source where you discover creators, where you can build your audience, and then you also build that deeper relationship where your fans become paid members. And so that is a huge shift in what we're seeing on platform and off platform.
Yeah, it's like what I'm hearing from you is that now the demand is if you make a show, you need to be thinking in multiple directions at once about the business of your show.
Yeah, it's like you're shifting to being a media, like building a media empire and actually thinking from all aspects of your business, not just simply audio and RSS feeds.
Georgie, you and your team at Flight Story have built arguably one of the most influential video podcasts out there, Diary of a CEO with Stephen Bartlett. You and your team have shared at length how you look at the data in every episode and you tweak it in real time. And I saw this post that you made on LinkedIn about human authorship rewriting the rules. How do you square your investment in analytics with this idea of human authorship?
Absolutely. We hold a lot of truths to be evident at the same time. And there's nothing that we like better in our business than holding two truths to be evident at the same time. And one of those first principle truths is kill the guesswork. And what video has enabled a lot of creators to do, and we were talking about media brands in the last answer, and that's absolutely what we think is now possible for people to build, is inside singular human beings, a walking, talking billion-dollar media companies. Steve started the Diary of a CEO 7 years ago. He started in his kitchen. In fact, he started in his wardrobe. And if you go back, that first episode is still available, still available for you to listen to. But now he's, you know, reaching 40 million people every single month across the show and the podcast itself. And the reason that we love video is A, it decentralizes distribution, which we've talked about before, but it also opens up an analytical suite that is way beyond what you can get on a singular RSS feed. And those analytics can become something that really allows you to understand the interest economics around your IP and the attention economics, but the interest economics around your IP. And if you are obsessed with creating for your primary customer, which is your audience, which is the people that you intend to reach with the message that you are creating for them, with the stories you want to tell, you have to have a deep level of passion for their interest economics, because right now they are overwhelmed with content that is trying to buy for their attention. So I have a first principle belief that we are going to build some of the biggest media brands in the world out of singular human IP. And Pablo is a great example of what is possible and what can scale in this place. And I think that we'll find human beings, particularly when we see strong signals of community, strong signals of identity, strong signals of belonging to this creator's world, that we see very important things happening.
May I ask you, Pablo, how you feel about being a singular human IP?
Love it. Love it. These are terms that I never thought in, but look, maybe a shorter way of inelegantly summarizing this is that every media person, journalist, artist is also a founder in some way. And that's just a fundamentally different job, which involves needing to understand what was just so brilliantly articulated, which was the incentive structure of how to win at this game. And look, the way I think about it macro is, yes, there was this very sort of like dark moment, at least on social media, where a lot of like, you know, media people were being told learn to code. And now, of course, AI has completely inverted that to the point where it's kind of sad. Like programmers just seemingly will be rendered obsolete. Maybe as by the time we're done here, they may be rendered obsolete. God bless. And so the question is, what is seemingly irreplaceable? And it is humanity. And there's a coldness in that, right? Like, we're talking about this all in terms of like product, but it is accurate. And so what I want to understand is the incentive structure around how do I appeal in a highly competitive field? How do I appeal to that audience? And I do think human connection and community is, these are exactly what people are starving for. And the thing that I think about as a journalist to add that other level to it is, you know, perspective. What's different between me and sort of like an institution of journalism is that I can transparently and frankly proudly own my perspective. And I can express, this is how I feel about this. This is why I wanted to take interest in this. It's not an omniscient voice from nowhere. And in that way, you get to, I think, communicate a humanity and an authenticity. And additionally, it also, in my specific field, can perhaps create in the process an impact on a news cycle. And so what are the vectors of discoverability? I'm not merely playing with an audience that I hope to gather around, you know, the fire I'm building, but I hope for people to have to reckon with what it is that I reported. And that gets fed into what is another way of discovering what it is that I do and the fact that I merely exist. So I don't know what the question was anymore because I've been rambling for too long, but it feels great to be an IP empire, I guess, is the short of it.
You're representing in this conversation the human. That's your role now.
Very good.
So your show, it's literally called Pablo Torre Finds Out, and you lead from this place of curiosity. And I am curious, how much do your curiosities guide your editorial decision making against, say, what the analytics tells you about what your audience wants?
Yeah, I was born ignorant, and I try to retain some of that ignorance. While the people who surround me are acutely aware of what those incentives and those metrics are, I always say, and this is just as much for the sustainability of my mental health, frankly, I just need to, I need to preserve what I feel like is a skill, which is my human discretion. And that is born out of a very real, sincere curiosity. Like, do I find this interesting or not? This is sort of like the skill in a previous era that would have belonged to a magazine editor, which is a compliment I pay as somebody who came up through magazines, right? You open an episode, you open an issue, and you have no idea what's going to be in there. But you trust that someone will deliver something of value to you on the other side and maybe even surprise you. And so I love sort of being insulated from the algorithm in that regard. At the same time, I need this to be something that works in this competitive landscape. You can sort of feel yourself tracking because, again, the point that was just raised about how the data is so much more granular on video, right? You get to see when people stop listening, stop watching you.
And you get to decide to be offended or not.
The bad news is that the human is offended. The human is bothered when someone doesn't eat the meal like I intended it. But I also at some point need to know if I'm getting a lot of reviews that the meal is bad in so many words, right? So it's navigating a feedback loop. And so short answer, partially aware, never fully, but I need to be told when I'm onto something or the opposite.
Totally. I'm curious about taking this same question and versioning it for your world, Stephanie. You have the entire Patreon portfolio at your fingertips, kind of this bird's eye view perspective in the conversation. What are some of the editorial trends that you're seeing? Like, what did the people want the chef to be laying down in front of them right now?
I think within podcasting specifically, we're consistently seeing strong performances in categories that you can imagine, like pop culture and comedy, lifestyle and hobbies, education and information. And I really think it's because these genres translate really well to video because it's personality driven, it's conversation led, it's community oriented. Some of the things that make a video human, which is what Pablo touched on. But I would say actually in terms of formats, another one that is really doing well is live. And I think it's because it takes that humanity up a notch where it's now a two-way conversation. You feel one step closer to the talent on the video because you're able to hear community moments in real time. You're able to oftentimes deliver questions and create that like best friend in your car seat feel that you used to get from the radio. For those who remember broadcast radio. and then more recently, we've seen traction with Quips, which is our quick posting feature that lives on our home Explore feed. And it allows creators to do a very low effort option of just posting clips, even just like selfies, quick messages, quick videos that are distributed even beyond their paid community to the rest of our feed as well. And that really aids in discovery and giving new audience a sample of what their content could be about. So I think it's really not about our video podcast winning. It's about creators getting more sophisticated with how they package and distribute their content. So is the goal discovery? Is it retention? Or is it deepening that community and let that dictate your video format strategy?
We're going to take a quick pause and we will be back after this message.
When I originally pitched this show as a roundtable to my team, they were like, Gemma, that sounds like a technological nightmare. That's going to mean multiple guests all recording across different time zones from different types of mics and setups. Luckily, we decided to make this show in partnership with Wistia. Wistia is an all-in-one recording, editing, hosting, and analytics platform that makes capturing high-quality audio and video totally seamless. So for this episode, we had guests beaming in from London and from Miami and New York, and Wistia was able to capture stable, real-time feeds from everyone without a hitch. Learn more about how Wistia works at wistia.com/signalroom. That's WISTIA.com/signalroom.
I'm curious, Georgie, as you're listening into this, if video podcasts are the sandbox, where are you seeing your audience perk up, pay attention? I guess the question is like, what's working, what's succeeding, and also maybe what surprised you?
I'll go back to how we kind of see that data in our decisioning. It's another person in the room with the humans making choices, and it isn't the thing dictating, but it's certainly directional. So we built a tool called Guest Radar to really help us kill the guesswork in this area. And what Guest Radar does is it takes genres, topics, areas of expertise, and it surfaces to us who are the people who are highest performing on any sort of digital channel on this specific topic. So we can see people who are overperforming on longevity, on creatine. So when they are on shows, when they are on, you know, social channels talking about this, when they're in the news, we can see like very significant signals of overperformance, which often means that they're an extremely compelling communicator on that topic. And that often means that they can make it very accessible for people. So we have a tool now that is telling us who to book. So it isn't us deciding. So it's very, very agnostic in terms of political view. It's very agnostic in terms of who we should be getting onto there. It's purely, are these people the world class at what they're talking about? So that is a huge piece of how data and tooling and technology has enabled us to produce exceptional content for this audience. The final piece is the host, the creator, interested in this topic that we found is very, very influential right now, in this person who's the world class expert on this topic. Are they interested in sitting down with this person for 5 hours to have an extremely extended long form conversation about this topic? Because it matters so much. The host's interest is another major validation in, you know, whether this episode or topic or show is going to perform well. We've all listened to shows or watched shows that you think, I don't think you're really interested in this topic. And I can tell as a participant in this program. So are they interested? Because they are going to have to read a 20 to 30 page research brief before they sit down. They're going to have to be prepared with a line of questioning that is going to help the algorithm better understand this topic as well, because we really think about how to structure these episodes in terms of algorithmic editing. So we find out a lot as we kind of produce in pre-production and the research and in post-production about what's working. Some things still surprise you, and that's why this is still so fun.
When was the last time you were really surprised by something in the data?
There was a show called Super Nanny in the UK. I don't know whether it translated into the US, but you know, she was a brilliant television host who talked about helping parents, you know, help their children manage the world well. And, you know, a lot of it was about discipline and making sure that they understood rules and regulate. And it was an iconic show about 20 years ago. And she was booked as a guest, and the team were telling me, you know, these signals are really strong about her. And I was just thinking, I don't know whether she's been out of the loop for a little bit. You know, maybe she's not as well known. And it's been our best performing video of all time. So I was wrong, and I loved it. And there's nothing I love better than being proved wrong. Failure is a religion in our business. We encourage people to fail all the time. We have a department called Failure and Experimentation. We have a head of failure in our business. So we're obsessed with failure. You learn nothing by being successful. It's just, it's a fool's errand. You actually learn so much more in, like, I don't know what I can swear, but I'm going to, fucking up and like making mistakes and learning and testing and iterating and making that a fun game for people to enjoy. So yeah, it was, I love it. I love it when I get it wrong. And I definitely got it wrong that time. And it's our biggest video so far on YouTube.
I can't tell if there's like a humility in that or, or like a masochistic pleasure or a little bit of both.
We call it ego death. So that is ego death. You have to have a large dose of ego death in this business.
Pablo, would you ever use this guest booking tool? Would you outsource your booking to the algo?
I would be fascinated to know what that tool suggests. I will say that I, for better and for worse, I'm pretty artisanal, to torture the restaurant metaphor.
Yeah, keep going.
No, it's just, I come to this, and look, I've existed since I've existed. I'm also now synonymous with the show. I was born in September of 2023. And so I relied on my network of friends and experts and my professional background in journalism to book shows. And God knows that there are lots of case studies where I'm like, man, I wish we had optimized this. We had cranked the optimization up because not enough people saw it. And so to the extent that there is a way to be better at having the things I am proud of consumed, I always want to know what that person in the room would say. I am, though, somebody for whom, you know, I think taste is a differentiator. I'll also point out that the greatest successes I've had so far in our show's young existence have been pretty experimental and totally not supported by anything resembling a mass of data that already existed. And I'll just give you one brief example, which is on paper, or rather on video, it doesn't seem very interesting to like look at court filings and documents because that seems very dry. And so what I did was I learned a lesson from YouTube, from another creator I kind of perversely admire, which is this kid Ryan of Ryan's Toys. And I go on and on about this kid Ryan because when I first saw it, I was like, this is deeply dystopian. Here is a small child opening gifts in front of a camera and millions upon millions of people watch it. And he gets paid millions upon millions of dollars. And I'm like, what about unboxing toys? Again, speaks to the human psychology that everyone's trying to suss out and dissect. And I made peace with the fact that there is some level of vicarious enjoyment, an authentic surprise. This, I get to feel like this kid, or kids get to feel like this kid, who is getting to see what's inside of the box, like the most ancient human thing, like what's in the vault, what's inside the box, right? And there's a toy, and you watch him play with it, and it's so popular, right? Even if it feels dark to me. And so the entire sort of premise of like how I do journalism on YouTube is, what if we were unboxing journalism? What if inside of these folders, these dossiers that I didn't let my guests see, what if inside of the box was a very important document that I would walk you up to so that you understood the stakes of it? And then when you saw it, it actually meant something. You got to have fun with it and you got to spontaneously react to it. And
I love it.
There really wasn't anything that was telling me metrically you should do that, but it was in a more sort of like artisanal way. I was like jealously watching this child. And I was like, why is this working? And why can't I have fun like that in front of an audience? And then I was like, well, maybe I can. And we just started experimenting with it.
I love this because actually my last question for y'all is about jealousy in the arena of ego death and human emotions. I want to know who each of you is jealous of in the video podcast space right now. It sounds like, Pablo, we kind of got there with Ryan.
I'm jealous of a small, maybe he's now like a 40-year-old adult, but he was, at the time I was jealous of him, a literal child. Yes.
I love it. Georgie, curious who you're jealous of. Another way of thinking of it is, of course, you know, who you think is killing it in the game right now.
I am jealous of the kid in their bedroom who is just starting. And they have an opportunity to share something important with the world with these suite of tools that have gone way beyond artisanal. You now have Hollywood production capabilities, whatever your perspective on that, at your fingertips now. And I don't think we look at like the major players in media and entertainment as sort of people to necessarily compare ourselves to. We're more worried about the person who was like Stephen and they're like 15 years old and they're going to come and we're going to become the incumbent and they're going to come and destroy our business from the inside because they're going to go and do things that they are able to do at the speed and the experimentation velocity that sometimes a single obsessed human being can achieve. So much so we have a department called Flight X in our company, which is a team of six whose entire job is to try and kill us. So their entire work is to try and kill our company, to kill our success, to kill our ideas, to kill our business. And they are trying to chase us down all the time through AI, technology, innovation. So I think I'm most jealous of those kids in their bedroom with an idea, access to some technology and an opportunity to go and build something spectacular.
I like this thin line that it's like jealous or threatened by or a little bit of both. Stephanie, your turn.
I wouldn't call it jealous. I'd use this opportunity to spotlight a creator on Patreon that's doing really well. I think a lot of the tension we've discussed, especially as it pertains to membership communities and widespread distribution, is are you building your business on like rented distribution, which is platforms that you don't own your audience, or are you building a thriving, deep community that can outlast any of the fickleness of the media landscape right now? And I think that there's nothing wrong with either path. What I really like are the people that can do both. And so Kev on Stage is an example of talent on our platform that has managed to build a thriving community off of his IP, starting alone with him and his comedic content, and then has expanded that to a media empire where he now has different properties under his umbrella that now are also thriving on Patreon. But now I think the interesting shift is legacy platforms like a Tubi, for example, are now having this shift towards bringing creator content. So it has now this full circle moment where now comedians and also other podcasters that have thrived with their membership communities on platforms like Patreon are now giving the opportunities to enter traditional landscapes and be on broadcast TV and thrive that way. So the talent, the comedians, the podcasters that have found a balance between owning your audience and building a thriving community, but have also now thrived in legacy media, I think are killing it.
So we're out for the kids and the comedians. Amazing. Thank you so much, Stephanie, Georgie, and Pablo.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
The Signal Room is created by the Signal Awards, and our team includes myself, Alex Kappelman, Emma Larson, Nick Snee, Amy Chen, Annika Bjarndotter, and Maral Sattar. I'm Gemma Brown. The Signal Room will be back next week, and we're bringing you a conversation on authenticity. There is such immense pressure on creators to be authentic all the time. And when you are your own product, how do you stay true to you? So we're going to have Anna Martin from Modern Love and Anna Sale from Death, Sex, and Money and Callum Johnson from The Callum Johnson Show in the Signal Room here to have that conversation. That's next week. Until then, take care.